Hey, this is Rick Casales from ExercisesForInjuries.com. Today, I have another interview for you, and what we're going to talk about is trigger points. And I will let the person that I'm interviewing introduce himself. So, Connor, I'll get you to introduce yourself.
Hey, everyone. My name is Connor Collins. I'm a registered massage therapist in just outside of Toronto in Ontario. I'm also a sports injury therapist, and I practice using a variety of manual techniques as well as some acupuncture and rehabilitative exercise in my practice. And thanks, Rick, for having me here today.
No problem. So I think we've been in touch through Facebook and exchanged some emails, and I've kind of visited your website. And the reason why I wanted to bring you on this call was when it comes to, you know, the fitness professional, and like strength coach, I mean, they all kind of understand that trigger points are important, something that needs to be addressed, something that can end up leading to, you know, pain and discomfort, injury, you know, affect performance. But there's a lot of kind of misconceptions when it comes to trigger points. So I wanted to bring you on the interview and kind of talk about trigger points and kind of what they are and what it can lead to and what we can do when it comes to a fitness setting. So maybe we'll start off with, like, what is a trigger point?
Okay, sure. Well, what a trigger point is, looking at the definition and some of the anatomy and physiology, is that a muscle is essentially made up of muscle fibers, and those muscle fibers at the cellular level or the very sort of microscopic level are made up of a bunch of units, and those units are meant to contract in unison. So when we flex the bicep, for example, those units shorten. And the thought is that for whatever reason, an overactive nervous system or potentially bad nutrition, for whatever reason, within that particular muscle, there's regional irritation, which causes shortening of those particular contractile units or the sarcomeres. And as a result, we get what's called trigger point formation. So there is actual some physiology as well as some anatomical change in the tissue. These aren't just spots that are irritated. There's spots that there's some tissue change that's gone on as well. So it's definitely important to recognize it from a physiological standpoint as well.
Okay. And then looking at trigger points, like, how can it end up affecting, you know, like the general population, like someone looking at exercising, or yeah, general population, someone that's not very active, you know, someone that's fit, you know, they go to the gym, they exercise, and the athlete. How can trigger points affect those three groups of people?
Well, in the general population, a lot of trigger points and can result because of muscle imbalances, right? We know that when we sit and are inactive, certain muscles get short or tight, and that can be either a true length issue or it can be a neurological issue. And typically what that will do is it'll affect regional blood flow, and blood flow is a great thing because it brings in new oxygen, helps tissue heal. Without that blood flow, you start to get accumulations of potentially waste products in that area, as well as muscles don't really get a chance to calm down and relax. And as a result, you'll get trigger points that'll start to form. And typically in the general population that's inactive, those trigger points aren't going to resolve themselves on their own, generally speaking. They may go latent, so they may calm down and then creep back up. And these are typically people that have recurring injuries. So they'll say, for example, my shoulder is good for 2 months and then it'll flare up, or especially in the low back, I'll get low back pain that flares up once every couple of times a year. And typically if we don't address those muscle imbalances or weaknesses, for example, you know, trigger points can accumulate, get worse, and in the general population, we usually see this in terms of pain, weakness, for example, headaches, and other dysfunctions. In the fitness person and the athletic population, it's a little bit more of the reverse. What we tend to see is that sometimes people aren't necessarily educated as well on exercise protocols, stretching, strengthening mobility, where they should be stable versus where they should be mobile. And generally, that'll cause muscle imbalances as well, or overcompensation in certain movements or movement patterns. For example, for those individuals that may do too much bench press on a regular occasion and not allow the tissue to rest properly, there's a high likelihood that, again, metabolic changes or metabolic waste can accumulate, and that can cause irritation to the tissue, and as a result, trigger points can form there. So in the fitness professional athlete realm, trigger points are much more about keeping up with tissue quality and making sure that the programming is well balanced, as well as the tissue and joint segments are well balanced. Whereas in the general population, it may be that lack of activity that's caused the imbalances, and as a result, the poor quality of tissue may be the result of the trigger points. In the athletic population, it's more the tissue is overworked or simply just weak or weak neurologically. So those are sort of the two different views in terms of how trigger points will affect different populations.
Okay. And then what are some common mistakes that people make when it relates to working on, you know, relieving or addressing their trigger points?
I think probably the number one, and in the fitness realm, a lot of people are using self-myofascial release and self-myofascial tools, which I think is great and certainly has value in a training program or simply in relieving pain. I think probably the number one common mistake is that people are a little bit too aggressive in the initial stages when approaching the tissue, as well as typically when we see people foam rolling, it's for a very short period of time. And in the manual therapy world, we like to take time working into tissue to a certain depth. Whereas a lot of the time we'll see individuals that are on the foam roller for 10 seconds and then off stretching afterwards. And, you know, in my opinion, that may not necessarily be the best way. Typically, when I'm coaching patients or athletes, I like to allow them to be on the self-myofascial release tool a little bit longer, as well as take time getting into the tissue. So, for example, like if you have a very deep trigger point in your calf or your quadricep, you need to get through all of the other layers with the with the foam roller or the lacrosse ball before you can get to the actual trigger point. And if you don't take time getting into the trigger point itself, a lot of the tissue that's above that will push you off. And a lot of the times when we're too aggressive, our nervous system will react in a very negative manner to that. And from that point on, tissue won't be receptive or as receptive to self-myofascial release. So, again, the two most common are take your time getting into tissue, as well as it monitoring your how aggressive you're being. And this doesn't mean that you can't be aggressive. It just means that you may want to monitor how aggressive you are from the onset of performing your foam rolling and work your way into the depth rather than just going at the trigger point right away.
Okay. Very cool. Interesting. Interesting. So then maybe looking, so you kind of talked about like the self-myofascial release and, you know, how it ends up differing when it comes to the professional. Now, can people improve or eliminate trigger points on their own, or do they need to seek professional help?
I think that fitness professionals, I think people using self-myofascial release tools are attempting to do that now, and I think that certainly, again, like we talked about earlier, trigger points have to meet certain criteria, and people think that they have trigger points when they may in fact not. I do believe that people can work on trigger points and relieve the symptoms and relieve the trigger points on their own, although I would say that they should tread lightly on, or I do tread lightly on saying that, because if there is something that's not a trigger point or borderline showing symptoms of a trigger point that should be addressed by a professional, then they should certainly do that first. So I would say that in all, you know, in a circumstance where an individual has, for instance, a sore knee, they've been evaluated by a professional. There's no structural damage. There's no neurological damage. They've been given guidance on how to use the tools. I think that certainly using the tools effectively with other stretching protocols and mobility work and programming protocols, I certainly think that they can make a huge difference with respect to pain that's originating from trigger points. The only thing that I would certainly say and confirm is that obviously the individual has not suffered some other serious injury or is getting symptoms from something that's not a trigger point, for example, like a neurological issue or an irritated nerve or something like that.
Okay. So then at what point would someone end up going to see, a professional when it relates to their trigger points?
Well, I think that, number one, if there's no structural damage and you've been given guidance obviously if there's an acute injury, people generally get it evaluated via x-ray or going to see their doctor. I think that if you've been told that you're working on trigger points or you feel like you yourself have trigger points and you're working on them, typically, if they're not getting better, you should probably see a professional at that point. The other thing too is that symptoms that typically are not characteristic of a trigger point need to be evaluated further. So those are things like muscle atrophy. So if you're getting lots of muscle mass, we know that that's typically not going to be a trigger point. Things like numbness and tingling or excessive weakness or loss of certain motor functions, like dexterity in the hand, we know that, those aren't trigger points. But in the event that someone's working on trigger points and they've been told that they have them by a professional, typically if they're not seeing any resolve in their performance or their pain, they should probably get it looked at by a professional, because they may be working on, say, trigger points in the leg, but there may also be trigger points in the hip that they're missing that are referring or causing what are called satellite trigger points in the leg as well. So, professionals and manual therapists or chiropractors or physiotherapists typically have, extensive training in how to treat these. They can also recognize signs and symptoms a little bit earlier, as well as potentially tweak exercises, tweak activities of daily living or sustain postures. To help a little bit more. It may not be that the individual is doing a poor job at treating them. It's just the manual therapist or the professional has a little bit more experience and can just recognize things that much sooner and that much more effectively, because essentially that's what they do for a living. So I would say when your symptoms are consistently getting worse or your performance is getting worse, or you're starting to see symptoms arising in other places, like let's say you've got leg pain and now you've got, or say upper leg pain, now you're starting to get calf pain as well. That's certainly a time to start seeing a professional, and the work that you're doing may be a benefit, but it's not the answer.
Okay. So then, we've kind of talked about, getting a professional to kind of work on them or utilizing some sort of tool to help address trigger points. Now, what are some other things that can end up affecting trigger points, like positively and negatively?
I think that, there are a number of factors, but I think probably the first and potentially one of the most important is positive and negative stressors from both a physical as well as a mental standpoint. So we know that we've got two types of stress that the body responds to, and one is called eustress, and that's positive stress, and the other is called distress, and that's negative stress. And typically, negative stress affects us in a negative way, and positive stress will typically affect us in a positive way, but too much positive stress can be a bad thing as well. So the first is managing both physical and mental stressors. So, for example, in a training program, we don't want individuals to overtrain. We want rest time. We want good rest in between our exercises. We want good rest in between our exercise days. And we also want to monitor that with nutrition and hydration, which are going to directly relate to our stress response. And that if we're poorly hydrated and have poor nutrition, our body is going to have more negative stress. So relating to positive stress, from a mental standpoint, we know that, you know, positive stress and positive outlook and positive relationships and positive work environment affect people in a positive way. So it's important to have those. And a lot of time in my clinical practice, I'll see people with a lot of tension headaches or upper neck pain, and that's as a result of stress. That's a typical point where individuals like to hold stress. And a lot of my coaching ends up being on, you know, some relaxation, trying to introduce things that people enjoy a little bit more. And that's a really positive thing to do. I think it's often sort of overlooked as well. So from a physical stress, again, we want that rest time. We want good nutrition. Other things that can affect trigger points are like seated postures. And again, typically when we're at work, if we work, for example, a desk job, we're going to be in a seated posture for a long period of time. And this can create, again, imbalances in the body from a soft tissue standpoint, from a neurological standpoint. So one of the big keys to that is trying to break position and get rest through tissue. So I advise that people, for example, that work on a desk job, will get up every 15 minutes and either just do a quick stretch or do a, you know, a movement or a particular exercise. And that will, again, the rest time will be very, very good for the trigger points. But that seated position in a sustained posture will be very, you know, very negative. Other things that can affect them in a negative way would be things like excessive, you know, alcohol consumption, excessive smoking that we know will relate to stress and tissue quality. And then, you know, there are certain medications that may affect tissue as well. But overall, you know, trying to lean towards a more of a healthy lifestyle will typically affect tissue quality in a more positive manner, where leading towards a more negative lifestyle will affect tissue in a negative manner. And we see this pretty regularly. So, you know, hydration, nutrition, minimizing sort of toxic stressors like, you know, smoking, alcohol, and potentially medications, monitoring your lifestyle to make sure things like, you know, blood pressure and, you know, cholesterol is under control are really good ways to. And then, you know, just staying on top of soft tissue health, which will be done through whether it be seeing a therapist on a regular basis, whether it's doing some foam rolling, whether it's getting out and being active, whether it's doing a yoga class, like all of those things are really good for tissue health. And, you know, the more often that you can work those into your regular routine on a weekly basis, the more positive the tissue is going to respond.
Okay. So we're getting close to the end of the interview. Is there any, you know, last-minute things that you would like to leave for listeners?
In terms of trigger points, you mean?
Just any, you know, any any points that you want to kind of cover that, you know, I'd never really asked a question that kind of highlighted something important that you wanted to share with the listeners? Give me about trigger points or anything else.
Well, I think one that I've mentioned before that I would just like to drive home again is that particular point on soft tissue work. And I talk a lot about when you're using tools, the principles of using the tools and how to use the tools effectively in a manner that I've just seen work really well for me. It's not that I think it's the be-all and end-all way, but it's a suggestion. And I think that, again, just reiterating that fact that when tissue is well hydrated and an individual has good nutrition and you spend time working into the tissue with the foam roller before getting to that particular trigger point, it just becomes a lot more effective in your in sort of addressing it, just because you're working within that what we like to call a neuromuscular barrier, or that barrier that the brain perceives something is threatening. And obviously when we're working on tissue, we're causing tissue to change a little bit, but you have to remember, and this is with exercise as well, is that ultimately what we're doing is affecting the brain itself and the nervous system. And those are what drive us, and those are what perceive change, and those are what hold change. And so I think that if people can take that message home, not only with relates to trigger points, but whether it be exercise or rehabilitation, and sort of monitor what they're doing with a person's brain and how they're moving, I think I think it'll change how people sort of look at how they're addressing not only trigger points, but maybe program design as well as maybe some particular exercises that they're doing. The other thing, too, is that we're talking a lot about trigger points, but I want to drive home the point that the trigger points, too, have to meet a certain criteria or have certain characteristics to be considered trigger points. And a lot of the time people are working on what they think are trigger points, but in fact they're not. They're tender points, which are just irritations within tissue. And again, there's no typical anatomical change there or physiological change. So I do talk a little bit more in length about this on my website as well, is that, you know, trigger points refer pain. Trigger points have what are called jump signs, or they twitch sometimes when you apply pressure to them. And those are all things that you should be able to recognize, because once you've met that criteria, then you can now either coach people to do self-myofascial release with confidence, knowing that the individual has a trigger point, or you can refer to the appropriate professional if you don't feel comfortable in coaching your clients, or you think that the person needs to be evaluated further. So, that information is available in a variety of sources. And so just be sure that, again, you know that it's a trigger point before you start working with your clients or working on it.
Okay, excellent point. Now, where can more people, where can people get more information about yourself, and, you know, if they're in the Toronto area, come see you if they need some help with their trigger points?
Most of my information is on my website, and that's www.connorpcollins.com, ConorPCollins. And I have some information about my clinical practice on there, as well as I do have a professional blog for fitness professionals and manual therapists. So there's a sort of a patient side to things as well as the professional side, and most of my information is there, so feel free to check it out.
Perfect. So thank you very much for your time, Connor.
No problem. Thanks, Rick.
And thank you very much, ExercisesForInjuries.com listeners. I really hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I have. I know you know, there's been lots of talk when it comes to trigger points in, you know, the fitness and the strength realm, and it is definitely important, but as Connor mentioned, there's a lot more that we need to kind of think about and consider when it comes to trigger points. So this is Rick Kaselge from ExercisesForInjuries.com thanking you for listening to the interview, and we will see you very soon on the blog. So this is Rick Kaselge saying take care and bye-bye.